Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
How's it going, Katie?
It's good. Just getting bitten by a cat for no fucking reason. Oh, shit. He's coming back.
He's like, you want to square bitch? Up?
I'll bite your fucking foot again.
He's being really, like, manic about it. He's, like, biting you and then rubbing on you and then biting you again.
He's really mad because normally we spend our Sundays, I think we talked about this before, on hanging out on the bed and stuff. And I'm in the chair not paying attention to him. And he's like, yeah. What the fuck is wrong with you?
He's like, we're out of our routine now. You're really upsetting my Sunday flow.
Yeah, he just scratched me. Damn. He pissed. I did just poke him, so I deserved that. Yeah, we are back in. We are recording this the same day as we recorded our last one. I didn't want to make Ashley wait for the rest of that story for a little bit.
I appreciate that.
Pre-recording some stuff. So as we said before, if anything like crazy has happened and like we haven't mentioned it, that's why. We're not just like super insensitive. We're paying attention to what's going on. It's just, you know, November 13th for us.
Yeah. We're always paying attention to stuff that's going on. It gives me constant anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My therapist will let you know I probably pay attention too much.
Yeah.
Unless you have something to say.
Nah, we can just get into
get it. Get right into it.
Yeah.
Joe Kennedy Jr. is dead. It's 1948. And with him passing, all of Joe Sr.'s attention comes on to JFK. In American Dynasty, the documentary, it's amazing on Discovery Plus. It's alleged that Joe literally said to JFK, okay, you're next. Like, all right, let's go. It's your turn. One of his close friends says at one point, JFK said to him, I can feel my father's breath on my neck.
Oh, God.
Just he is right there.
And I was going to say, all of his attention is not a good thing to have.
No, I would not want all of fucking Joe Kennedy's attention. Sounds horrible. Considering the fact that JFK had never been prepped for any of this the way that Joe Jr. was, he was the second son. This was not the life that he was prepared for.
This was not the plan.
This was not the plan. 2 years prior to Joe Jr. passing, Joe Sr. went to JFK and was like, all right, motherfucker, you're going to Congress. We're launching your political career. But there's no spot open in Boston. There is one being held in the 11th district that is opening up, and it's held by another politician. But historian Evan Thomas says Joe buys him off by retiring his debt and encourages him to run for mayor, making him go away and opening up the spot for Jack.
What? So he needed to move into that district?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
He's, you know, he's John Kennedy.
The Kennedys are going to do what the Kennedys
are going to do. They're going to fucking do. So now all of a sudden, John F. Kennedy is on the streets having to learn how to be a politician. And while he's been prepped for this his entire life, been on camera in everyone's eye, like his whole life he has been watched. He is now from dusk till dawn on the streets, kissing babies, talking to people, like really putting in his... non-stop. I mean, you know what.
Yes, I'm laughing because of the kissing babies part, because Lord, I could not ever imagine doing that on the campaign trail.
Oh, dude, they kissed. There's so many baby pictures.
I feel like that's such a weird thing.
Oh, dude, post-pandemic, we're not doing that.
I could never.
Don't make me touch your fucking baby.
I always still just believe that that was so weird, because I truly believe that, like, every child and every baby should have bodily autonomy, where, like, if you don't want to be touched, you don't want to be touched, no matter who it is. Absolutely. I feel like we're taking that away by just letting politicians grab onto them and kiss them, and it just feels absolutely. So weird.
Absolutely. To this me, little, like, it feels just weird. Handling over this little bundle.
I'm like, how about let's not?
Yeah, let's please not. And this is insane to consider, especially with his horrible back. Mm. Horrible. Dude is getting shot up with steroids, like just constantly.
Yes. So speaking from my own experience, and I know that this was not at a congressional level of campaigning, but for the last 3 months, I, with a bad ankle and bad knee, and to be honest, a pretty bad back, oh my god, I was killing myself out there. And that was only like from 5:30 to 7:30 on the weekdays and then 4 hours on a Saturday. But it was crazy, so I can't even imagine how it was
for we're talking 14-hour days, incredibly sickly. I cannot stress how bad this guy's back was. We get into it a little bit more, but dude went through 4 or 5 surgeries. Like, so bad. Addison's on top of it. Like, he is so sick. The Kennedy campaign managers said that at one point, Joe said, with the amount of money I spent, I could have made anyone congressman.
I mean, yes, because of the money thing, but also, like, you gotta pick somebody charismatic.
You're looking at this from a 2022 perspective. This is 1940s. No, dude, are you Lyndon B. Johnson? No one gave a fuck about charisma. Like, JFK, and I'm being serious. JFK is the first charismatic president. The first one. He changed the standards for what we expect of presidents. No one fucking cared before that. People actually were like, so, like, what do you believe in? What are you going to do? Mm. So he's elected, but he gets sick again. And this is when he's secretly diagnosed with Addison's. They tell everyone he's dealing with a reoccurring bout of malaria, but it's Addison's. JFK, at 34, has been in Congress 3 terms, and he's living a single bachelor's life. So we're just kind of hopping forward in time. But now we're in the 1950s, and that's like a fucking no-no if you're going to go to the White House.
Yeah, you need to be a family man.
On top of that, 25-year-old Bobby just had Joe Sr.'s first grandchild.
Oh, so he's like, you're falling behind.
He is absolutely falling behind. So Jack, the eldest son, who's being pushed into a political career, needs to get married. He has to. So his buddy, Charles Bartlett, sets him up with Jackie Lee Bouvier, a.k.a. Jackie Onassis, who had just completed her bachelor's degree at George Washington University.
Okay, but can we talk about that name? Because I did not know her maiden name, and, like, I just love that name.
Oh, she's
amazing. Jackie Lee Bouvier.
Yeah. She's...
You a fancy bitch.
Oh, the fanciest. And she's different than any other woman that JFK has ever interacted with. So, well, you know, they're getting together. They're dating. It's 1952, and JFK announces that he's running for the Massachusetts Senate seat. Rose Kennedy, whose dad was the mayor of Boston, knew what was up. She knew how to campaign. She knew what to do. So, Rose, JFK, and Rose's other daughters would go to fancy hotels in Boston and invite all of the ladies in town to, like, dress up in their finest clothes and have tea with the Kennedys.
Wow. Like, you'd have my vote.
Exactly. Exactly. So while that's going on, Robert Kennedy is working in the Department of Justice as an attorney, and he kind of takes on the role as the Kennedy family fixer. He was willing to be the bad cop when it was necessary.
Okay.
And with JFK and his brother Bobby beside him, he wins what was one of the biggest political upsets in Massachusetts history. And after that, JFK and Jackie get married. Now, because he's Joe Kennedy Sr., he wants this wedding to be like the social event of the season. He wants it to open up doors. It's a spectacle. Jackie wanted a wedding for her friends and family.
Ugh.
Obviously, Joe Sr. wins.
Of course.
Poor
Jackie.
I know. And we start seeing the reality behind the false fairy tale narrative that we're told. And, like, a lot of people talk about how JFK was, like, a womanizer and all that stuff. And we'll get into that. But he did worse things, in my opinion. And we're coming to it. French Vogue, quote, According to the author Rosemary E. Reed Miller, during a 2007 interview with NPR, the groom's famously domineering father, Joseph Kennedy, was involved in every detail of the day.
Of course he was.
The dress.
No, I would fucking murder that man.
Having just returned from Paris, Jackie wanted something simple, chic, and French. And to be fair, her wedding dress, the one that she wore, was amazing. Mm. And still to this day, people make their dresses that 100% inspired by this. The more ostentatious design was in fact the preference of her soon-to-be father-in-law, who had also been responsible for inviting a huge amount of press to cover the society wedding of the season. And while that is a really known thing about the wedding, French Vogue points to the less-known story of its designer, Anne Lowe, the wildly talented, trailblazing black courtier who catered to much of the New York's high society throughout the 1950s, including the Rockefellers, the Roosevelts, and the DuPonts.
Yes, girl. Fantastic.
And this is more from the French Vogue. Nothing about the wedding was easy. 10 days before Kennedy's ceremony, a pipe burst in Lowe's studio and destroyed the original wedding dress.
Oh my God.
Plus a further 9 out of 15 bridesmaids' gowns. The main gown had taken 2 months and more than 50 yards of silk taffeta.
That, nah, take me out. Right? Take me out. I would not want to have to deal with that.
The designer's team worked tirelessly to catch up and remake the intricate pieces at a loss of $2,200, which is about $21,000 in today's money.
Oh my God.
What should have been the highlight of Anne Lowe's career, she was ultimately written out of. As a black woman in the 1950s, her name was only mentioned once in the Washington Post by Nina Hyde when every single media outlet was talking about the dress itself. So we're going to pause here. Shout out to you, Anne Lowe. That dress was fucking beautiful and you changed the wedding game.
And the fact that you and your team pulled that off, I mean, holy shit. What a save.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one fucking talked about her.
Yeah, they deserve so much recognition for that. That's fucking insane. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine that happening for just, like, a normal wedding, but then it's JFK's wedding.
It's the Kennedys. God.
That's why I said, take me out. I would rather just die than have to just deal kill with me. That situation.
Just kill me. So this was the first of quite a few troubling things in their romance. And Jack is just getting sicker. The joke is, this is a quote that like everyone talks about. If a mosquito bit Jack, the mosquito would get sick. Like that is how sickly this fucking dude is.
No, that's so bad.
While he's dealing with this horrible illness with his Addison's, which just a little clip about that. So it's a rare long-term endocrine disorder, and it's characterized by inadequate production of steroid hormones, cortisol, and aldosterone. So like adrenaline insufficiency. It comes on slowly, but insidiously is how they describe it. Slow and insidiously. And may include abdominal pain, gastrointestinal abnormalities, weakness, and weight loss. The darkening of the skin. It can also include low blood pressure, vomiting, lower back pain, and loss of consciousness.
Wow.
It is, it's pretty bad. And, you know, we're talking in the early 1950s. Like, they're not really knowing what to do here. But it does also make surgery really complicated.
I bet.
So a doctor told him that the only option for his back was surgery. But they're not even sure that the surgery would do anything. And that the Addison's makes him prone to infection, making it a 50% chance that the surgery itself will kill him.
That's absolutely insane.
JFK insists on getting the surgery, even though Joe Sr. is terrified. Fully fucking terrified. The Kennedy biographers keep being like, he lost his daughter to a botched lobotomy. Medical stuff scares him. And I'm over here like, fuck you. You didn't even goddamn visit her. Two-year-olds are able to recognize their family. Like, fuck you. Okay. Anyway. What they did to Rosemary really fucking upsets me. Yeah, like, so deeply. Because they're like, she, you know, she barely had mental capacity. I'm sorry, have you met a two-year-old? You're saying that she's like a two-year-old. They know who their family is. Mm-hmm. They're well aware of what's going on. Like, fuck you. He was scared about losing the last of his golden trio. Let's be fucking real here. Okay. So, I mean, we all know that JFK lives through this, but the operation goes real fucking bad. Real bad. And he develops a life-threatening infection. Oh. The life-threatening infection that the doctors were worried about.
Of course. It's the curse.
Yeah. Once again, he's given his last rites. They're like, oh, you're about to die. So he's given his last rites, and somehow he pulls through. They literally put a steel plate in his back and then gets a horrible infection. And like throughout the whole thing, Jackie has to care for him. JFK is not even president yet, and he's already died like 5 times. Like, it's insane.
Absolute insanity.
It's insane. So JFK is back and edit and is like, what's up, baby? I want to be the vice president. Then he makes his dad, he makes Bobby tell his dad that. He's like, yeah, I'm going to be VP, but Bobby, you have to tell dad. Which just goes to show you that one, he knew it's not a great idea. Two, he's still a little boy who was, three, terrified of daddy. Joe flips out on them.
Oh boy.
Flips out. He's like, vice president, absolutely not. This isn't part of the plan. He's like screaming at them like they're children on a playground. Like, it's Christmas morning, and it's literally Christmas, and he's yelling at them because they tell him on Christmas Eve.
Wow.
So ultimately, JFK loses out on the VP job, and this is the first time he's, like, kind of ever lost anything in his life. Like, no one tells the Kennedys no, but he does make it super clear that he says, I want everyone to rally around the VP choice. Like, it's important that we come together and support who ultimately won, which is a level of professionalism we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
By the mid-50s, JFK's got hella nieces and nephews. And due to the death of his older siblings, he's the oldest Kennedy brother. So it's 1956 and Jackie Kennedy gets pregnant. During that, Jack decides to travel off around the world and go on tour and, you know, go travel, do some things. And Jackie goes into labor. While JFK is on a cruise, Jackie starts delivering early. She's hemorrhaging. And Bobby is the one who is there for her in the hospital. When Jackie comes out of her twilight birth, Bobby is the one to tell her that the baby is lost.
No.
As much as people romanticize JFK and his relationship with his wife, he was a really troubled guy, and it's really apparent by what his response was. JFK said, "The baby's lost. There's nothing I can do. I'm sure Jackie will be fine," and continued on his tour. Everyone else and his dad was like, get your ass back here now. Optics, optics, optics. If you want to be president, you'll get back here. So once his dad says so, he finally does. That's a pretty good indication of their relationship.
Yeah.
If you ask me. Like,
that's very fucked up.
It's really fucked up. So that's kind of who JFK is as a person. Alone. Not people are like, oh, he's so great. And it's like, he's a really troubled guy. Bobby becomes an attorney and he starts investigating the corruption for the Senate. He's like going out into the world and he's trying to make a name for himself, not just as like JFK's brother or Joe Kennedy's son. He's like, I am Robert.
I am my own man.
Yeah. Yeah. People are like, hey, Bobby Kennedy, what's up? And he's like, I'm Robert. So Joe's response is, you don't know what you're getting into. Don't go near them. And Robert responds with, I am. And I'm going straight up to Capitol Hill. Joe gets so mad that he storms out. And many people point to this as why they believe that Joe Kennedy had mob ties and mafia ties, like ties with organized crime. Because why not have your son be the one who takes down organized crime? So in 1957, Robert Kennedy launches an all-out investigation on corruption, focusing on corruption and organized labor, because the mob is moving into organized labor. Mm-hmm. Joe Sr. is furious. The gossip at the time was that Joe Sr. was a bootlegger, which was never really proved, but Evan Thomas, Kennedy biographer, says that he was really shady and had some really shady friends, and hated that Robert and his wife Ethel were really going after the mob to the point where they were getting calls and threats. Robert, I'm Kennedy, like,
you don't just get that rich by being a straight up person.
No, no, you don't. You don't.
Oh, no.
Robert Kennedy summons Sam Giancana, a huge gangster and the head of the Chicago outfit. He's like the most wealthy and powerful guy in the mob at the time. Are you laughing at Giancana?
It's the only way yes, you can say it. Yes, I am. That's great.
Sam pleads the fifth 40 times.
Oh, shit.
And eventually begins laughing at the questions. Robert responds with, are you going to answer my questions? Or are you just going to giggle at them? I thought only little girls giggled. Like in fucking court, live on TV.
Damn.
Just insulted the most powerful, wealthy guy in the mob.
That's crazy.
And Joe Sr. is like, oh shit, that's my son. What a badass. Hell yeah, I'm here now. What's up? I am in the audience.
He's like, oh, he has a backbone.
Yep. Yep. He's like, shit, he didn't need a steel plate planted in his back to have a little strength there. Let's go. Oh. So JFK shows up at the hearings, and now these two brothers are taking on the mob together. While this goes on, Jackie gives birth to John's first child, his daughter. And on January 1st, 1960, JFK, finally a family man, announces his candidacy for the presidency.
Oh, damn.
But before
they really were just waiting for him to have a kid, weren't they?
Yeah. Wow. Because at this point, he is so young that having a kid, he's in his 30s. Having a kid makes him look older.
More mature.
More mature. He knows how to lead. It's, you know, he doesn't look like a little, he's a skinny guy. He's so tiny.
Yeah.
It gives him a little more stature to stand on.
Yeah, yeah.
But before he can be the president, he has him and his family have to get him elected as the Democratic Party nominee. And he's going up against the paper bag of a personality, Lyndon B. Johnson. Which he was. Just so boring. Yeah. So boring. With the incredible Jackie Kennedy at his side, JFK did really, really well. There are three huge issues with Kennedy, though. He's a deathly ill, womanizing Catholic. And the first two, he can hide. The second, he cannot.
Oh, was he the first Catholic president we ever had? Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah.
So people were not down with the idea of a Catholic president because this was the time where Catholics were still not widely accepted. And there's so much anti-Catholic rhetoric at the time.
The idea. I was going to say, I was just watching the new season of Derry Girls, and it very much gives me the vibes of, like, Protestants fucking hating Catholics.
Oh, yeah. And that went on through the 90s. Like, yeah. And this was, like, the peak of it in the 50s and 60s. And the biggest thing is that people were worried that the Pope would be leading the White House. Because the Pope leads Catholics. So that's a really big issue.
It's like high separation of church and state.
Exactly. And this is something that the Kennedys have dealt with their entire lives. Rose Kennedy often felt like she wasn't accepted. And Joe Sr. felt the same. He once read a description of himself in a newspaper describing him as an Irishman. And his response was, when are they going to stop calling me that? I'm an American. Because that is the Irish Catholic hate that these people faced their whole fucking lives.
God, that's crazy.
The West Virginia vote was super, super important. And that was one of those things where it's like, if you can take West Virginia, that means a lot. So rather than just kind of ignoring that, JFK went down there and head on directly referenced his religious views. His response was, no one cared when I enrolled in the army that I was a Catholic. No one cared when my brother died for this country that he was Catholic.
Oh, shit.
No one cared that I was Catholic when I became a senator. And the direct quote was, the presidency is not elected to be the protector of faith.
Oh, snap. Like, I mean, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. Not at all. And I just want to remind everyone to throw that quote out these holiday seasons. The presidency is not elected to be the protector of faith. It is not their job.
You'll really get them with that, too, because all these, like, QAnon people supposedly love JFK and are waiting for him to rise back up and come back to life and, like, run with Donald Trump. Like, that's what their conspiracy theory is. And, like, multiple times now, they've all gone to where he was murdered, waiting for him to come back from the dead. And he never does.
Well, it's also weird flash
because it's a conspiracy theory. But it's also, like, he's a Democrat.
He'd also be over 100.
Yeah.
If he never died. Second of all, I've heard people being like, yeah, but we're actually waiting for JFK Jr. And I'm like, well, then why are you in fucking Texas, bro? He died in an airplane on his way to Martha's Vineyard. What are you doing here? Why would he come here? Why would JFK come here where he was shot?
Make sense.
Doesn't make any fucking sense. And against all odds, JFK fucking did it. He got West Virginia.
Amazing.
At the DNC, LBJ tries to get sassy in his speech, saying something along the lines of, like, there are people who say they're going to get the job done, but when the time comes, they don't. And JFK comes back in his, well, I agree with Lyndon completely. And since the vague issues he pointed out in his speech, but since he didn't say it was me that he's talking about, I can only assume he's referring to some other presidential nominees. JFK is smart, sexy, sickly, and fucking going for it.
Oh my God, smart, sexy, sickly.
You go, Glenn Coco. According to Dan Fenn, a member of the 1960 Kennedy staff, LBJ responds with, hey, remember how Joe Sr. was a Nazi appeaser? Which is, like, fair.
Oh, damn.
But then, the day before the vote, has his people slide under the door a piece of paper under the door of every delegate telling them that Kennedy had Addison's.
Oh, shit.
So Bobby Kennedy, who I said before is willing to be the bad guy, is like, all right, motherfucker. That's probably the same way that if you look at him, you're like, that dude's fucking sick.
Yeah.
And the medical privacy was something that the JFK is really instilled. I wonder why. That was something they really rallied for. There wasn't a ton of medical privacy before the Kennedy administration, honestly.
Yeah.
So Bobby Kennedy is like, all right, motherfucker, you are public enemy number one. And he rallies JFK's doctors to lie in public. And they all get in front of the camera and say, like, no, he's healthy as shit. Like, this is peak health that we're all looking for.
That we're all physically seeing with our eyes.
Yeah. And it's super important to remember that the Kennedy family is basically the first influencers of America.
Kind of, yeah.
With his connections and his history in Hollywood, Joe knew exactly what to do. He knew how... He's Cleopatra painting a fucking spectacle. He knows exactly what to do.
Yes!
And he spins all of this bullshit and makes Lyndon B. Johnson look like the fucking asshole that he is. So he becomes the new... Kennedy becomes the new Democratic presidential candidate, and he has to pick a vice president. And the smartest thing to do, despite the fact that the two Kennedy brothers fucking despised Lyndon, their dad points out he's from Texas and they don't love you there. And if he's your vice president, you're his boss. You're in charge of him. Keep your friends close, but your enemies your subordinates. So they pick him.
Wow.
And the two of them are running against the sitting VP, notoriously great guy, Richard Nixon.
History would prove otherwise.
Good guy. In September of 1960, Nixon and JFK go to debate. With his history of growing up in the family that he did and his dad's Hollywood knowledge ingrained into everything he's ever done, Kennedy looks like perfection on TV. His hair is perfect. He's calm. He's cool. He's collected. He's strategically sitting to literally be showing his good side. He knew exactly what to do when he wasn't talking. He's the reason that presidential candidates now like go through training of like what to look like and make sure you're writing and nodding when people are talking.
I literally took a class with journalist Bob Berkowitz to learn all of that kind of stuff when I first started campaigning.
And people do that now because of JFK. Mm-hmm. 'Cause in contrast to him, Nixon looked like an anxious, fidgety, uncertain mess.
Wow.
No one had ever paid attention to like before because no one had
like
ever
the body
had
language and stuff.
Yeah, no one had ever had a Kennedy fucking next to them, making them look just horrible. So 6 weeks of an incredibly hard-fought presidential campaign passes and we're at voting day. When Ohio goes for Nixon, the suspense is fucking palatable. And it comes down to Illinois. JFK calls up his dad's good friend, the very powerful mayor of Chicago, Richard Daley. And Richard Daley says, "We're going to win Illinois with the help of a few close friends." There are rumors that dead people voted in Chicago, that there are mass amounts of voter fraud, but we'll never be able to confirm. As the Kennedys waited in the middle of the night, the Secret Service moves in and surrounds the Kennedy house, which was the telltale sign. They had won. Just over 100 years since the Kennedy family arrived in Boston, completely penniless, the name was preceded by the most prestigious title in America, president. Notorious anti-vax douchebag Robert Kennedy Jr. says it's hard to describe the feeling of the house when JFK won the election. And I did look it up. He was 6 at the time, so he was there. I didn't believe it at first. I was like, there's no fucking way you were there. It's January 20th, 1961, and JFK is being sworn in as America's youngest elected president and first Catholic president, 43 when inaugurated. And this is when we get the famous ask not what you can do for your country, or ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country.
Can I tell you that I hear that at least Monday, Wednesday, Friday every week, because at work it is Helen's ringtone.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Damn. Okay. I did not know that.
And I'll hear it go off. It'll be like, "My fellow Americans." And I'm just like, oh, here we go again.
Oops. Here we go. You know, that is where we're going to pause for here. JFK is into the White House. Next week, we're going to be getting into the first few years of the White House, setting everything up. We're going to talk about the Bay of Pigs a little bit. And we'll basically bring us up to fully discussing the feud between the CIA and JFK and really prepping us for the assassination. So not next week, but the week after that will be the beginning of the assassination episodes.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yes.
Your TikToks are so fascinating. So I'm like really just so excited to have a longer format.
I'm really excited to like put them in a better chronological order because mm-hmm. I was just like so excited that people wanted me to talk about my hyperfixation.
Yeah.
That I was just like, go, 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 go. But there's so much more than I've put out on TikTok. I mean, even just this, we've now done 2 hours total, 2 episodes of JFK. I've probably haven't even made on TikTok a total of like 40 minutes of content. So there's already more in this. And I'm so fucking pumped to get into it. JFK, this whole thing is so fascinating. I know I had mentioned earlier that Joe Sr. was like a shady dude doing shady things. A lot of people point to this phone call with the mayor of Chicago, Richard Daley, saying that we're going to win Illinois with the help of a few close friends, that he was referring to the mob.
I mean, that's the vibe I got.
To Sam Giancotti.
Especially in Chicago.
Yes. To the dude that Robert just insulted in court. Mm-hmm. The same guy that his dad told him, don't go after them.
Yeah.
So people think that the mob helped get JFK into the White House, but we'll then see what happens between the mob and JFK now that he's in the White House, mm-hmm. and why they are kind of a number one of the number one players for people who they think assassinated Kennedy. God fucking damn. That is the end of my notes.
Damn, dude. This is great. I'm enjoying it.
It's so good. And you only have to wait a couple days for the next couple episodes because I think we're recording on Tuesday. Yes. Whenever I get mad at Goosey, I just yell at her and say, stop barking, I'll eat you. And she stops. So until next week.
Bye.
Bye. For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.